Welcome to Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news, trends, and hottest topics that focus on advances in cybersecurity and cyber industry economics. Our expert yet down-to-earth hosts make cybersecurity straightforward. They ask the tough questions and make this challenging topic something that everyone can understand. Our candid approach lets guests open up on topics we would all like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at newcyberfrontier.com. That's www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join today's host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. As always, we're excited when we have somebody in the studio today, and you can see him here. We have Anthony Carter, who has joined me, I think the only one risking the COVID-19 threat scare we have. The streets out here are empty right now.
Traffic is great.
I know. We can just cruise right in. Don't breathe on me. No, we're here across the table, but it's good to have somebody to visit, even if we're risking a little bit today, because I've been all online for all the rest of the day. But Anthony Carter, cybersecurity concierge. Now, we're going to talk about that because I don't know what that means. And medium writer is what you like to be identified as. And I'm going to ask about that one, too, because, you know, expert, medium, low, where are we at there? But what that medium means.
All right.
But I know you have several certifications, CISSP and some other advanced ones, quite a few years in the industry, military background. But tell us about your background, how you got here, what made you what you are today.
So I actually was interested in cybersecurity well into junior high and high school. But really, my professional expertise didn't start until I hopped into the military.
Which branch was that?
That was Air Force. Did about a little over 12 years in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And just started asking the recruiters, hey, I'm interested in computers. Which one's the best? And mm-hmm. they pointed me right towards Air Force. And so I went in there.
Which other recruiters did you talk to?
I talked to the Marines, the Navy, the Army.
And the Air Force recruiter pushed you towards Air Force?
Yeah, he was like, you want to just come right over here. Yeah,
so, you know, they said they. Usually it's I, whoever represents that service, push you towards that service.
Okay. Well, it was at kind of the point in time where everybody was trying to recruit. So you walk in the office and everybody pops their heads up. And
okay, gotcha.
So then I went computers, and they all went, that guy.
That guy. So that was the guy that was more into computers there in the office, and he got people in the Air Force because he was.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so went in as a system administrator, I believe at the time it was, so it was a 3 Charlie, and it's changed a few times over the years.
And all those acronyms, I'm not even going to ask. It's just another military job classification. So,
yeah, I know here in Colorado, somebody will know what that means.
Yeah. Anyway, you had an interest in computers.
Mm-hmm.
Off to the military, all us
became a
poor boys do, right?
Became a sysadmin. It was actually ended up stationed right back home here up at the academy.
Okay.
And
so you grew up here and you got stationed back here in the Air Force.
I didn't grow up here. I ended up living here for a few years before I joined.
Okay.
But, you know, you join the military sometimes for travel, and they just circle you right back around.
And if you join it to try and stay in one place, you're going to be traveling. Yeah. So whatever you don't want, I get that one. That one, too. Good.
And started doing standard sysadmin work.
Uh-huh.
And actually started the group up at the academy was just starting to allow first-term airmen or brand-new airmen to come in as staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up helping them out, standing up their educational network and designing their virtual environment. And one of my mentors there really started impressing on me that, hey, you need to not just look at your job, not just look at the narrow scope of what you're doing, ask questions about everything.
Mm-hmm.
To try and assimilate as much knowledge as on different subjects as you possibly can. And over a couple of years, you just start picking up. I mean, this field is super broad, mm-hmm. so that there's a lot to pick up. And that combined with just a need at the academy for VIP support, they were, you know, supporting the various generals.
Okay, very important people.
Yeah. And some of the conferences and things there, like they have their fall conference there for all the generals.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually required a subtle shift in mindset, not just from being able to...
So the security of the people coming in, the digital security of where what they had access to and came into cyber.
Not just the digital security, but their whole temporary digital existence while they were there.
Gotcha. Let's take a break here from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today with Anthony Carter in the studio, and we were talking about the Air Force and coming in and that cross between, and now I get it. It's actually... What years were you in the military?
From 2008 to actually just recently.
Okay.
2007, 2008 to just recently.
But that cross with the physical security is what mm-hmm. a lot of people tributes their, you know, understanding how to connect and separate the digital components. And you said even temporary, somebody's in town only for a week.
Right.
They have to exist like they're there everywhere else in the military on your network and then be gone when they're gone and not have any trace almost.
We had some guys who would literally fly themselves in because, you know, they're pilots.
Uh-huh.
They'd hop in a car, go to the conference, and want everything to be ready to go. And being able to move such almost an executive level figure from one place to another mm-hmm. seamlessly and kind of maintain a lot of their
separation.
Or their basic access to information, not just the separation.
Mm-hmm.
Was very important, and that required not only having some of that sysadmin structural knowledge and sort of infrastructure knowledge, but the awareness of how people would access all that
information. Yeah, the physical division securing right. mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So how did that then cross now into the civilian world?
So that actually started because of that desire or that habit of trying to pull in all sorts of information
mm-hmm.
People started to get into the habit of just coming to me, hey, Carter, can I pick your brain? Hey, Carter, can I ask you some info?
Mm-hmm.
And becoming that sort of go-to expertise figure over time generated a lot of encouragement for as I was getting out, hey, you know, you should really do your own thing and just kind of do the expertise thing, and help people out where they need
mm-hmm.
that expertise in a sort of very personal manner.
Yeah. So we've talked before, and you explained mm-hmm. your job and what you do now as, and I was like, I relate it in my mind to like the people in the movie, right?
Yeah.
That they're special forces in the military, and they get out and they find their way into contract killing, right? They're practicing all these skills, but they're doing it on a, you know, relational basis. And, you know, the morality of it is always the question in the movies, which you don't have to deal with. You can, cybersecurity is just a job, right?
Right, right.
But transitioning from there, and the one thing I know that you've been successful, people have recommended you, that's how we got in connection.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to understand how it is that you made that transition. You know, first of all, who do you help? And how, do, you know, we'll talk about how you get some contacts and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Before we get there, there was something else we wanted to talk about, and we started at the beginning of the show saying the streets were empty today.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know you put a post up in a comparison of these virus scare, the corona, the COVID-19, with cybersecurity,
mm-hmm.
and making that an immediate kind of a current events comparison has got a lot of attention from your readers, things you post to and everything. Let's talk about that. What do you see? What kind of a association do you make? And do you see anything that in cybersecurity is going to be impacted by what we're seeing with the scare?
So there is actually a lot of cybersecurity impact, but like I was in a conversation with somebody and they were saying that, you know, they don't call them computer viruses for no reason. So there's a lot of similarity between how somebody responds to a physical disaster or an incident and a digital one. And I don't have any professional medical expertise, obviously.
All right, so we won't ask you anything about the strain and transition and what it's doing to the symptoms.
Right, exactly. But
off that topic.
Other than that, there is a lot of, because of the correlation, I can actually view it through the lens of my personal experience and note things like there's certain failures to prepare, or certain vulnerabilities that people had as they were going about their daily lives. And the people in this instance are operating just like individual computer systems. And we know when an attacker comes in that they're trying to look for vulnerabilities, exploit vulnerabilities. And in this instance, that's exactly what a virus has done to people's immune systems.
And that's why they call it a computer virus.
Exactly.
Models what viruses do.
Even noted that at some point there was a, because of the overload of traffic at various places, you know, medical facilities, social facilities, places like that, you know, obviously all the restaurants, bars, everything are closed. That tends to mirror what we would call in the, you know, the cascade failure of overloaded systems as they get attacked one by one and try to receive all sorts of traffic.
So what, and somebody told me that what they're trying to do with the coronavirus spread by separating everybody, basically isolating everybody, stopping gatherings, is just stop the spread of it at a certain rate. They're not going to stop the spread. It's going to happen. If it spreads, it spreads. And it's just stopping the peak of the spread so that we don't have a million at once. We have 10,000 at a time over a longer period of time.
Right, exactly.
So that it doesn't overload the infrastructure for our medical services.
Exactly.
And that's what you're talking about with the computer resources and networks and things like that.
And if you think about it, what that sort of quarantine process and procedure, even people self-quarantining, staying in their homes, things like that, people are becoming their own IPS, idea, their intrusion detection system. They are going, hey, there's a problem, and self-quarantining their own system, if you will. Or the government itself is sort of acting as that central defensive antivirus sort of infrastructure. And that similarity was very interesting to me as I was watching these events unfold. I've seen this before in some of these cyber disaster response things.
Yeah. So what lessons learned can we take from it that would help us in our cyber disasters?
So in our cyber disasters, noting, I think particularly important is noting the initial reaction. As soon as it kind of was broadly socially aware, or people were made socially aware, there was a big, I don't want to say panic, but there was that big emotional response. People wanted to just do things and do things. People
over-prepared.
Over-prepared either. Or they want to go from no preparedness to completely prepared and, stock hundreds of rolls of toilet paper for some reason. Things like that. And in our organizations, when we come under cyber attack, or an insider threat incident happens, all of a sudden everybody's scrambling around.
But before that, they only had two rolls of toilet paper.
Right, exactly.
Okay. But now all of a sudden everybody needs 100 at one time.
Exactly. And so that they're running around, for example, with insider threat, there's all of a sudden an attribution phase. You know, people are, who did it? What am I What am I trying to protect against? Who am I trying to protect against? Who can I trust?
Mm-hmm.
And you see that very easily with the COVID scare. And I don't use the word scare lightly, but where people are afraid to shake hands. They're afraid to see who they can socially trust.
Mm-hmm.
And then just trying to figure out what can be done about it. There's a lot of people raising their hands to say, here's what can be done about it. When what really does need to be done, as with a cyber attack, or that as we would see in a cyber attack, information is calmed down a little bit so
everybody needs to collectively do something all at once, but not in overreaction.
Exactly.
And that goes even, I mean, if you say before the incident,
mm-hmm.
We need to prepare a little bit more and have a couple rolled toilet paper instead of one.
Yeah.
10 instead of 100. But let's take a break. We're going to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
All right, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today with Anthony Carter from Cybersecurity Concierge, which we still have to talk about what you say. I think that means. But before the break, we were talking about the relation of the COVID-19 virus and the preparedness you see and the overreaction to cyber attacks and what we have. And we said, you know, people weren't prepared before. People didn't have an average amount of cushion zone, so mm-hmm. everybody had to go out and over-prepare at the same time. And we're the same way with the most cyber organizations.
Right.
They're like, okay, I'll prepare for cybersecurity attack later, but then they wait until it happens.
Exactly. Right?
And then they have to buy 100 rolls of toilet paper times 1,000 people.
Or, you know, even worse, they think they're prepared. You know, there's a level of complacency that, hey, we've got the new thing installed. We have the software patch.
And then, you know, I'd say in big companies, maybe, but a lot of small, you know, unless you're big enough to say we have a budget for it and they threw some money at it, it's the small companies all know, or mid-sized, are like, they know they're not prepared.
Very true.
But it's a risk of doing business.
Exactly.
Just like driving down the road. You accept the risk if you're going to get something done.
And then a risk or something exploits a risk that you weren't really expecting, and that sort of unknown, come out of left field
mm-hmm.
kind of feeling that really sets people on edge, and you want to be able to do something about it.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, because larger reactions tend to feel more immediate, they feel like they are effective.
Mm-hmm.
That's often the go-to. We're gonna hit it with a hammer, and that'll do it.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, what you really need to be able to do is go, okay, we have a problem. Step back from it a little bit objectively, and be able to assess it, and take calm action. Like you were saying, you know, that instead of 100 rolls of toilet paper, we'll go, maybe we only need 5. Maybe if we'll we'll dial it back a little bit, that might get us through this. And just being able to kind of meter your emotional response to an incident when something that you hold dear or is important to you is brought into question.
Yeah. So, and then let's go back to that cyber concierge.
All right.
I think you just explained what it is, right? Yeah. You go in, the emotional neutral person, yep. and help them through either the preparation before or during an incident, but just as that trusted advisor from what you've told me in the past.
And like you said, because of the structure of how I operate with it, it is just me. Mm-hmm. I can be a true neutral third party. There's no other hands in the pot. There's no other informational input. And so that confidential information mm-hmm. and that trust is, it starts and stops with me.
Okay.
And I've heard some people describe what I do a lot like cyber therapy. You know, somebody comes to me, we're going to talk about their problems and they're going to share that with me. Mm-hmm. And in the same kind of way, that person needs to be comfortable knowing that I can either protect that information or otherwise won't share or spread it.
Okay. So do you sign like a, what's that called? That we're
lawyers, non-disclosure.
Not even a non-disclosure. What's that lawyers have, confidentiality?
Yeah,
requirement under the bar. I forget what that the term is.
Unfortunately, I don't think because of the way cyber law works these days, I don't think there's a similar level of actual protection.
And that's what I was asking, because that protection basically says the lawyer can go to court and say, I can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're subpoenaed, even as a trusted advisor, you could be asked to divulge.
To my knowledge, as long as I've got that agreement in place, there's a declaration of proprietary information, which would then allow me to refer them to
Have to go to the holder, not to
exactly you. Because it's not my proprietary information.
That makes sense. Interesting. So, medium writer, that second part. What does that? You're not an expert. You're medium. You're not low.
So it's not a rating scale or a size. Medium is actually a company that allows for professionals or anybody really with with information to share, to write about it. It's a company like Twitter, like Instagram.
So almost what we're doing here, saying,
right? Exactly.
Putting out medium that I gotcha. Media it, type of.
Yeah, it's a medium. It's a
gotcha.
A transfer process, and.
And I thought you were meeting a level. I was yeah, like, exactly. What level is medium? You know.
That's usually. Maybe they need to work on their marketing a little bit because it's kind of an ambiguous phrase.
Uh-huh.
But I was pointed to it by a few other individuals that, hey, if you want to share your expertise, that sort of mm-hmm. can I pick your brain, this is a broad way of doing that. And being able to just put some of my knowledge out there, some of my insight out there for okay. people to read on a broad spectrum.
All right. So... Now, you got into this after the military
mm-hmm.
And took in some clients, maybe people you'd met before you got mm-hmm. out type of thing. I'm not even going to pry as to how. But if somebody was looking to do this, you know, I hear you have a lot of students that are like, hey, I don't know if I want to go work for a big company. How could somebody get into it? Do they have to have that background in the military and bring something out of it? Or could somebody just start a business now? They're screaming for cybersecurity people everywhere. Why can't 100 people do this?
So I think the key component, or I would say key components, rather,
mm-hmm.
First off, that desire or practice that was instilled upon me early in my career to start to get that broad range of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to be a one-man show, you've got to be able to answer a lot of questions from a lot of different angles.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, being able to think on your feet. So... An ability to jump from topic to topic in a small related manner, depending on what you're trying to address. You know, somebody's trying to patch their system or, you know, address a vulnerability, and maybe they're not quite sure how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to be able to pull in knowledge that says, hey, maybe here's a hardware solution, here's a software solution, and... I'll borrow a term from some books, but a wetware solution, a people solution.
Mm-hmm.
There's they might be able to accomplish it in a number of different given ways, and what works best for that person and that person's mission, if you will. Being able to figure that out is very important.
Yeah. So in, I would say one of the biggest questions that I would have, or people would have that wanted to do that, which I have done this and I'm playing devil's advocate here.
All right.
is, you know, how do you differentiate yourself from somebody else? I mean, in cybersecurity, there's not, you know, big companies have products. There's so many products out there. People are inundated. Mm-hmm. Everybody's an expert. That's really the thing that we sell. Almost everybody sells their expertise.
Right.
How do you say, I'm the expert to listen to? I'm the person you want to use instead of the other 50 guys that knocked on your door? How do you differentiate?
So in my case, it's a question of where the person's concern rests. Are they looking for a large maintenance solution, or, you know, some sort of, they're trying to roll out a giant environment or a whole new infrastructure, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or do they have this one problem that's really been sort of nagging at them or is a stopgap for their organization? And maybe maybe throwing tons of people at it isn't going to be the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, numbers only do so much. And even more so if it starts to deal with very sensitive information,
mm-hmm.
or very important information, there's a degree of, they aren't sure if they want to share that with a lot of people or be able to kind of just put it out there for people to fix. That's why you don't see a lot of, or certain companies don't do a lot of bug bounties, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would call me and say, hey, I've got a problem. It's kind of close hold. Or it's very mission critical and close hold. And you need to come in and take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of talk with us about what we can do with it.
Okay. So it seems like at the point where, you know, people call you, you said, mm-hmm. And I know I've heard you say that it's like word of mouth, mm-hmm. your services from one person to the other. Where did you start with that Rolodex? How would somebody say, you know, I'm the person that wants to get this reputation? Is it just, hey, I had to super impress somebody? I had to do really good. Is that what you attribute it to?
It's very much what I attribute a lot of it to. The point at which you become sort of that go-to person, they want to ask you specifically questions, and then it's not just one person, it starts to be people from other organizations,
mm-hmm.
you know, hearing about you secondhand as a solver of problems. That's I think a point at which this career path could be a possibility if you kind of invest into that.
I mean, I've known some people that were extremely talented,
mm-hmm.
we'll say practitioners, technical tacticians, mm-hmm. even that
I like that word,
did not do very well,
mm-hmm.
at what you're talking about, and went and put themselves out there, I'm going to do my own company, and it seemed to be, even though they pretty much were the expert in every way, and I would vouch for that,
mm-hmm.
they didn't resonate with the people aspect or something on the other side.
You're exactly right. That seems to be a component, because I know I've gone to several conferences, and there's always some guy working on a tool off to the side who blows my mind with how smart he is. And there's plenty of people in this field who have leaps and bounds more knowledge than either of us put together. And what is often missing is that social component, that ability to talk to people, to...
Hey, I'm just going to help you.
Right. As I mentioned, that trust between somebody is, mm-hmm. very important. Being able to say, hey, I'm going to help you with your problems. Let's talk about them.
Interesting. I think that's a good thing, is you hit it right on the head. A lot of people that are very technical end up talking at them.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to know, is somebody working with me? You know, it's a step-by-step thing, and just let's work through the problem, not just have somebody come in and talk at me and then leave, and I'm not sure what I'm left with. So I think that's a good, you know, good approach. As we kind of reach the end of time, though, I wanted to give you the opportunity to, you know, tell us who you could use as customers, who would, how they get a hold of you, and what types of services you offer.
So as we've been talking a little bit, my preferred sort of clientele, or at least who I specialize in, tends to be a lot of those, if you've got that sensitive information, that things you want to keep close hold, or even a large pool of assets. I've had clients that were real estate investors, for example. You know, that they're small footprint business, but they've got a large pool of assets.
So working with them personally is just the company.
Not just the company. Because often with that small footprint, they're very much, I won't say a single point of failure, but a single point of vulnerability.
Gotcha. And some people actually target those VIPs.
Absolutely.
And you support that VIP kind of confidential concierge. It's all coming together now with your title.
Yeah. It
took me a while.
And so probably the best way to get a hold of me, due to that compartmented sort of way I operate, we do have a contact email address. contact@cartersecurity.net. Or you can actually reach out to me on Twitter, where I've started posting a lot of those Medium articles we were talking about. I am @businesscarter.
Okay.
And you can just send me a message on there or through email, and we'll get to talking.
That is good. Yeah, we don't like to give out phone numbers because, you know, it just becomes a problem.
Absolutely.
But, Twitter and email, reach out to Anthony Carter. Thanks for joining today, Anthony.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to New Cyber Frontier. Remember to follow or like our post and circulate each new show to your networks. We keep you informed, bring you the latest news, explore new trends, and find the hottest topics. With New Cyber Frontier, you don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert. Just get plugged in. We encourage you to get involved. Tell us what topics interest you and join our mailing lists. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. That's newcyberfrontier.com. Check out our previous interviews and please let us know if there are any topics that you would like to hear discussed. See you next time on New Cyber Frontier.